97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
To you. Welcome into Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. I am Mark Cox, and here along with Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman.
Pew, pew.
Go Bengals!
Go Bengals. I've told you this. People that listen to my show on 97.1 already know this. I've largely given up on the NFL. I haven't watched it in a couple of years.
You're not alone.
Their woke culture, I just can't stand it.
Play the game.
But ultimately, I'm a football fan. I played it in high school. Believe it or not, I actually walked onto the team at the University of Kentucky many years ago, got my butt kicked. That didn't last long, so I technically still have 4 years of eligibility left, if anybody's interested. But regardless, I still love the game. And particularly when it comes to playoff football, I'm probably going to watch. Just hold my nose and watch, because there were some great games. And now I grew up a long-suffering Bengals fan. I got to root for him this weekend.
You have to. I like the game. I like college ball. Not that this year is any worse, but college ball still seems like there's so much heart in it. Not that there's not heart in the NFL, but there's just so much money and politics and control, and it just, you know, it's a mess. I'd rather go to a high school football game, personally.
Yeah, Friday Night Lights.
You know, for the game.
I've enjoyed college basketball for that same reason. I don't watch the NBA, even though, as a Kentucky Wildcat fan, a lot of my former players populate the NFL, or the NBA now, and the big stars, Anthony Davis.
Are you saying that your team is a feeder for the NBA?
I believe, and I could be wrong about this, that Kentucky has more former players in the NBA than any other college.
Whoa.
Right now. Pretty sure.
Playing it out there.
We'll ask that. Tom Ackerman will
tell us. I'm pretty sure that is a true fact.
Well, again, for the game, love the game. Love the strategy, love everything that goes along with it. But when it's like going to, let's say you went to a benign Garth Brooks concert, or go see Elton John. And all of a sudden they launch into the political stuff from the stage. I'm not there for that. Do the music. Yeah. Now, if you go to a Ted Nugent concert, you know what you're going to
get. Yeah, it's true.
Or Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young show.
You know what you're going to get.
So, you know what I mean?
Or Lady Gaga.
Or Neil Young. Oh, boy, let's go there. No, let's not. So, anyway, go Bengals. I'm happy for your team, man.
Yeah, keep on rocking in the free world there, Bo.
You have any wagers on this?
You know, I've bought some spots on one of the boards.
Oh, the squares.
Squares. Yeah. I bought some
the
squares.
The Rocket Mortgage one?
And of course, the numbers are picked at random, so I have no way. I have not seen the numbers yet, but I'm pulling for the Bengals. Now, Ackerman described to me how to make an emotional hedge bet the other day. He said, like, for example, if you really want the Rams to lose, decide how much that's worth to you. Would you pay $100 to see the Rams lose? He said, so take that money and go out and place a bet on the Rams to win. Right?
Okay.
And if they win, the bet pays off, so you get a payoff out of it. And if they lose, it was worth $100 to you to have your dream come true that the Rams lost. He called it an emotional hedge bet. I'd never heard of that before, but it makes sense, right?
Okay.
Well, for those of you who don't know, and thanks for listening to the show for the first time, I work for the St. Louis Blues. I play the music and blow the goal horn. In fact, you can see me blow the goal horn at @_CarlTheIntern on Twitter and Instagram. And I have worked in professional sports since 1996, or as I like to say, the year after Wayne Gretzky left.
Uh-huh.
For 10 years, I worked for the Rams, also playing the music. So I have friends that still work there.
They're even rooting against them?
No, yes, they are. That's the story.
There are people in St. Louis that are rooting for the Rams because they still have an emotional attachment. They were here for 20 years.
Yeah.
And some people grew up with the Rams, and they're upset that they left, but they still root for them. I am not one of those people, but I still have friends that still work for the team, and if they win, I would be happy for them.
So has Mark changed you?
No.
Are you a Bengals fan?
One of the reasons I don't care is because I used to work for the Rams for 10 years, and then they left, and so now I'm mad at them.
They abandoned you.
Yeah. How about the party? Do you do a Super Bowl party? Because my wife and I, it's a two-people party.
Yeah, we used to get together with maybe my in-laws or something.
I meet the same group of about 20 of us every year for the last 30 years.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
My favorite joke I saw this week related to the Super Bowl is it looks like a dummied up letter from the NFL head offices that basically says they're concerned. They have a growing concern over the Super Bowl ending up being in a city where the local team is one of the two teams playing. Like this time, it was Kansas City, or this year it's going to be the Rams are playing in their home stadium. They're basically the home team for the Super Bowl, right?
Right.
And to avoid that moving forward, they're just going to permanently play the game in Dallas. And my cowboy friends did not appreciate that.
No, absolutely not.
I just say that. Yeah, that's good. So I did want to mention before we move along with the show here, did you see, remember the soundbite from Beto O'Rourke back in 2019, speaking of the Second Amendment, where he talked about taking your guns? Listen to it again.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47.
So this was the failed presidential candidate and then failed Senate candidate, Beto O'Rourke, who ran against Ted Cruz down in Texas. There were a lot of stories at the time that once he dropped out of the presidential race, Joe Biden was going to appoint him as his gun czar.
Right, yeah, I remember
right?
that.
Remember that? And even as recently as November, somebody went back to him and said, are you still sticking to this? We're going to take your AR-15. And he said, absolutely, I don't back off that a bit. And then he met with some political consultants because now he's running for governor in the state of Texas, where everybody wears a 10-gallon hat, right?
And a lot of them carry open carry.
Some political consultant got to him and said, that ship's not going to sail. And so yesterday, this week, a reporter got to him and asked him that question again, and here's what he said.
I'm not interested in taking anything from anyone. What I want to make sure that we do is defend the Second Amendment.
Hold on. It is truly upside down world.
Do you have whiplash?
Wow.
He went from hell yes, we're taking your AR-15 and AK-47. Like, we're going to confiscate it. We're going to buy it back from you, even though you didn't buy it from us to begin with.
Wow.
To now, I don't want to take anything from anybody. I want to defend the Second Amendment. Is there anybody in their right mind that would believe a word that ever came out of this guy's mouth?
Not in their right mind, but there are people that will believe that. Wow, that is crazy. I have not heard that soundbite.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, well, there's your politicians
for
you.
That's why I had to play it, because I'm like, come on.
That's the thing. I can quote a politician, but man, it just doesn't really hit home until you hear it come out of their mouth.
Yeah.
And that is one of those. Beto O'Rourke, to me, the name, just the name alone, I'm not going to harass him or anything or bully him. It sounds like a Star Wars character to me.
I think of Philo Beto. Remember that?
Absolutely.
Any Which Way But Loose.
Oh, I love those movies, dude. Yeah. Love those movies.
Ryan Recker keeps trying to spoil Book of Boba Fett for me.
I think you guys want to have me on,
but I can't. talk about it yet because I haven't seen it, because my family watches it as a family.
You're speaking foreign language. I don't know any of that crap.
That's all right.
I just don't. But good luck with that.
Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you what. So we know there's a football game going on this weekend. A lot of people are kind of focused on that. But if you're looking for something to do, there's a great event going on down at the City Foundry. If you're one of those people that says, let's ride, and that means getting on your Harley or your motorcycle and taking off, This is going to be a great event.
It is going to be a great event. If you've missed the leather and lace dances of long ago, get your leather out, get your lace out, and head on down there. It is the 7th Annual Cycle Showcase, STL. We're actually going to talk to the guy putting it together, and he's missed a year or so. It's going to be one heck of a show. Plus, I've never been to the Foundry. Have you been?
I've not been down there since they redid it.
It's on Van Evander, right across from IKEA and like Forest Park Parkway.
Okay, yeah, no, I think it's what I've seen online. Matter of fact, we're going to a birthday party this weekend. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to take my wife down there.
Yeah.
Just so she could see it. Plus, she loves motorcycles. She loves beautiful motorcycles. And it's truly artwork. We're going to hear all about that coming up in just a moment.
Take a few pictures, and I'd love to see that. So let us know. That'll be great. Also, we're raising money. Bo's raising money with his Poker Bash, and they've got another fabulous firearm that they're going to be raffling off. We're going to have all the details on that for you coming up on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. We'll be right back.
Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors. Oh, can you imagine getting out on two wheels? You know, I actually saw it on the warm temperatures we had this past week, people on a motorcycle. And then there's some crazy person that parks in our parking garage here that's on a motorcycle every day.
Every day?
Yeah.
In this weather?
Taking
up a whole spot. Lately, but still.
Taking up a whole spot. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, for those that are dreaming of being out on the road with the wind in your hair or wind across your scalp, you bald guys. We've got Motorcycle on the Brain, the 7th Annual Cycle Showcase STL. It's a two-day event celebrating the art and history of motorcycling from all over the world with rare and custom bikes. And it's at a location that I've never been to, so maybe this will draw some people from the outskirts to come in. Randy Nolge is our guest. And Randy, your title with this organization is what?
I guess you'd call me the creator.
Ooh, the brainchild. Yeah. Welcome to Second Amendment Radio, sir. Tell us about what you got going on and what it's going on this weekend.
Well, I'm bringing in about 50 bikes, a little over 50 bikes, actually, from all over North America. Classic bikes, racing bikes, custom bikes, a lot of custom bikes this year. I didn't do a show last year, so I've got 2 years of searching the country for really cool custom bikes, all stacked up. Just a bunch of eye candy we're going to bring down to the City Foundry. And, yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah, well, that place is cool to begin with. Lots of good food and drink and all that stuff down there. So how does it work, Randy? Is it a paid admission to get in?
It is. It's only $10 just to cover some security costs and things like that. Kids 16 and under, if you can't drive, if you don't have a driver's license, you're free. But adults are only $10, and it's pay at the door. There's no advance tickets or anything like that.
But this is just it's a big show. It's eye candy. It's kind of like going to like the off-road motorcycle shows at various locations, but it's the cool stuff. It's the high-end stuff, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I go to Vintage Bike Night and I see the classic bikes, and then I go to European Bike Night and I see the stuff there. And I thought, why can't I put all of the cool bikes together in one place? And I've been doing this since 2013. This is my 7th show. Now word's getting out around the country that this is really something to be a part of if you're serious about either your custom restoration or your custom build. Builders are coming from all over North America. This is our first international show where we've got a bike coming in from Canada.
Wow.
So I'm really excited about how this thing has grown and what it's become.
No concern about the bike getting over the bridge from Canada?
I'm betting it's here.
Yeah.
He's actually en route already on his way. I heard from him this morning, and he's up in North Dakota now. So he's heading this way, and look forward to seeing him and all of St. Louis show up. I've got artists coming in from all over the country to, creating moto-centric art, we'll call it. I've got craftspeople creating on site. I've got a guy that hand makes boots, stitch by stitch. All by hand. I've got a guy that makes knives coming out of Colorado. He was on Forge with Fire. Everything inspirational about being creative and artistic and everything on two wheels.
What a great idea. I mean, is there anything else like this in the country?
You know, my ego says no.
Let's go with that.
I'm trying to push the boundaries of what people think of when you say bike show. You know, people may think a big open floor in a convention center. I'm bringing in a lot of lighting, some sound, and really trying to bridge the gap between what you think of as a bike show and maybe what people are seeing now with like the Van Gogh experience.
I was just thinking the same thing as you said it. This is a great time. I don't know if the Leather and Lace dance party charity event at Casa Loma has happened in the last couple of years, but it's a great time. It's Valentine's weekend. Get your leather and your lace on and go out and show up and have a great time. I love events like this. Aside from some of the vendors that you talked about, are any of the motorcycles for sale?
Well, you know the old saying.
Everything's for sale.
Got a
yeah.
I've got a vintage Vincent that's scheduled to be here, and one just went across the auction block on the Mecum show last week for over $200,000.
Wow, so, that's amazing.
If you've got the pockets, I'm sure everything that you see might be for sale.
Yeah.
But this is a display, and I set this up for families. This is truly a family friendly event. I set this up for families or people that aren't bike people. I put descriptions underneath each bike to tell them what is special about it or what's unique. So nobody can walk in and feel alienated or they feel dumb or what have you. It's really
beautiful art. It's beautiful art.
Yeah, they are.
You know, back in the day, it was, I know it's Hollywood, but Orange County Chopper really raised the bar of the awareness of these custom motorcycles, and they did a great job. And there's so many custom bike builders around. Matter of fact, I knew a guy that worked out of Daytona Harley-Davidson, a side business of theirs. They were commissioned to make a motorcycle, a Superman motorcycle for Shaquille O'Neal. And so they had to measure them like you do a suit, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
Huge. Absolutely.
So they create this thing. Here's the problem. Nobody could test drive it because nobody could reach the controls. It's that big. But it is amazing. But would you agree Orange County Choppers definitely rose the awareness of these styles and these extreme motorcycles?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Them and Jesse James had his West Coast Choppers franchise, and he was branded everywhere. Orange County Choppers. There was a whole slew of guys back in the early 2000s that really lit the spark. And then and immediately after that, you couldn't buy a Harley Davidson at the dealership. They were sold out, and there was a waiting list for everything. And that was a really fun time, to be honest, because it really it reignited that spirit,
yeah,
if you will,
mm-hmm,
that everybody just lived vicariously through those shows for a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for people who have never experienced something like this, and it sounds like it's unique to the country, hopefully they'll show up Saturday and Sunday and whichever day they happen to be listening to this show. And you can buy tickets right at the door, $10 for adults, and children ages 15 and under are free. That's fantastic. You know, one thing we haven't really talked about is the kissing booth. I think you should probably
mention that. Hey, bringing that back.
I'm just saying.
Well, okay. The kissing booth, yes it is, but maybe not what you're thinking of.
Oh, crap.
It's a movie on Netflix.
Well, for years, I've been aligned with a couple of local animal rescues, and we were trying to figure out how to incorporate that into my show. So we came up with the idea of a puppy kissing booth, and we called Smooches for Pooches. It actually, in addition to doing good for the charities, it sets the tone for the event. When people walk in, maybe they're a little intimidated, maybe they're not a bike person or what have you, but when you see a group of big burly guys standing around kissing puppies, it kind of relaxes the atmosphere, if you will, and it sets the tone for what kind of event this is. This is really, I can't stress it enough, it's really a family friendly event. It's a great date event for Valentine's weekend. Yeah, everybody should check this out. It's a lot of fun.
Some of the best people on the planet are leather clad. I can attest to that. I've got a lot of great friends in the motorcycle world. Although I gave up the street riding a few years ago, this texting and driving thing, man, it changed the whole world as far as riding on the road. Call me a wimp, but my wife says, I don't think I want to ride this year because we had two close calls the year before. I'm like, babe, no problem. We play on the dirt,
absolutely,
but we still admire beautiful works of art like this.
Well, there's going to be over 50 beautiful pieces here, and I'd love for you to see it.
And for anybody that hasn't gone to the Foundry, I may be the only one in the area that hasn't been. I hear nothing but awesome reviews of it. The food is awesome, and this is just another way to combine, a great event at a great location. So good on you, man. Nice to talk to you, Randy.
I appreciate it, fellas. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Randy Knowles with the 7th Annual Cycle Showcase, STL. CycleShowcaseSTL.com is the website, so people can learn more about that. Great having him on here.
And you can still go to this event and still not miss the Super Bowl, Mark.
Nice. That's a good point. Yeah, go Bengals. I'm rooting for the Bengals.
Yeah,
and against the Rams. Yeah.
All right. We've got more of Second Amendment Radio and the great outdoors next. We can climb so high, I never wanna die. Born to be wild. Born to be wild. When you have an intern, Carl the intern, at the helm of this show, you get everything. Background?
ELO.
Oh, look at you. Look at you.
ELO from the Face the Music album. That's the one with the song that nobody knows the title of, which has got the backwards at the beginning. Fire on High is what it's called. But this song is called Poker, which was the other hit from this album.
Which we will be talking about, a poker bash coming up to support our police in this segment. This segment actually brought to you by Razorback Armory, your gun concierge. We are going to be talking to one of the owners of Razorback Armory in just a moment. But if you have never been to RazorbackArmory.com, start your journey there. Then go meet some new friends at Razorback Armory. It's always a great experience every time I go in. And the great thing is it's centrally located in De Pere, just off Manchester and 270. But get the address and everything else at RazorbackArmory.com. Jesse, welcome to the show. Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. How are you, sir?
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm good. You sound tired.
Well, you know, you're working around the clock. It's how that
for going into 3 years now. Thank you very much, or longer. Yeah. How things at the store doing?
Good, good. Very busy. Keep plugging away. Obviously, with suppressor sales and everything kind of kicking up like we thought they would. And taking care of all the paperwork with it, but now we're handling it, making it happen.
And that's what we're hoping for, a big update on that. The culture of Second Amendment, and it was heard in Jeff City again this week. Where did we end up with that? Do you know, Mark?
What, for the
they were
Second Amendment protection?
Yeah, the SAPA bill.
Preservation Act. To my knowledge, there was no ruling on it. The court is considering arguments against it right now.
Okay.
They have not made a ruling on that yet that I've seen.
Well, I think I talked to a couple of law enforcement officers, that actually chiefs that you and I both know, and they said that the confusing part is you ask 10 attorneys what this bill means, you'll get 10 different opinions, and it's like, okay, well, if it's confusing, maybe they do need to clear it up a little bit, or at least in their the publication of it, so attorneys do know how to deal with this, and the law enforcement agencies do as well.
Yeah, you know, I've had several police chiefs reach out to me who were not real thrilled, with the way Aaron Doerr, who we had on from the the Missouri Firearms Coalition, had described the motivations behind SAPA, and he suggested, I don't want to put words in his mouth, that in some cases local departments were losing money because formerly working with the feds, when they would confiscate stuff, part of that money came back to the local department. And if they're afraid of having that relationship now because of SAPA, they were losing money and funds to their departments. The chiefs say that's not the case, and that they are just simply concerned with the fines being levied against their department if they're working in conjunction. I think it's much ado about nothing, frankly. Personally, I think it's much ado about nothing. Ultimately, though, the Supreme Court in Missouri is going to make that ruling. They're going to make that decision. And then the legislature is going to have to decide if they're going to tweak it.
Yeah. Jess, do you have an opinion on it or any updates that you've heard?
Well, I'm the same thing you guys were saying. There hasn't been a ruling that we've heard of. I know they were talking about it. I think when they first drew this up, possibly hastily, it was more to say, hey, don't come to Missouri and try to press, unjust or undue, unconstitutional gun laws on us. If you do, not even any Missouri law enforcement will be able to help you. Now, the way it was written, it's really kind of subjective. So, yeah, local law enforcement, can I help the federal government prosecute someone in my, you know, in my jurisdiction that's obviously needs to be prosecuted. Well, that's a weird gray area that probably needs to be cleaned up.
Right.
But I think they were going against gun confiscation, you know, illegal seizure of certain weapons. You know, I think the spirit or the goal was there. I don't think it necessarily was written to be clear enough to let law enforcement, you know, attorneys, people know how it was going
to
be implemented.
Well, somebody mentioned to me that, as background, right, just a source mentioned to me, who happened to be a lawyer, that the simplest way to fix it is just to attach a date to it, that this is in effect for any law or ruling passed after the date this law took effect.
Oh.
Nothing before that,
okay.
Because the point of it was to prevent the Biden administration and his, you know, people like Beto O'Rourke, who's going to take your AR-15 and your AK-47 away from you,
and your
AR-14. from passing something, maybe by administrative fiat, because that's what he likes to do. He likes to sign executive orders or have his appointee to the ATF, whoever that ends up being, try to do something from a regulatory standpoint that we disagree with or we think infringes on the Second Amendment. So if they just made it more clear that it's forward-facing and not backward-looking, that would satisfy the concerns of a lot of members of law enforcement and people in the legal profession. So we'll see if that happens.
It's very confusing. I do want to ask you, Jesse, I think I text you, actually, about this thing, this contraption similar to a bump stock on a long gun. It was something that's added to a handgun that no law-abiding gun owner is going to buy one of these things that I can't imagine, but it's been found in big cities, Chicago, St. Louis, that turns a handgun, a semi-automatic handgun, into an automatic. Can you explain what that's called and what people are seeing out there?
Well, it's technically not full auto, so it's not like there's a switch that. So fully automatic weapons, generally speaking, you have a safety selector, which would go from safe to semi to full auto, which will allow you no shots, one shot, or just dump the magazine. What this is more or less is like a forced reset trigger. So it's forcing your finger forward, but you are pulling rearward. And with just the appropriate amount of tension, you can go forward, go backward at a high rate of speed so that you would be able to dump the magazine out. You have on the pistol that you're looking at that we talked about in that picture, you have minimal control over your weapon. I mean, it's going to be all over the place.
Right.
Because you don't have good points of contact to it. You're not stabilizing it. It's very gimmicky type switch. And legally, if you're only getting, so if only one, every time you pull the trigger, only one round goes off, it's not a machine gun. It's not a fully automatic weapon. But it definitely draws an eyebrow. It draws concern to people. And it's probably something that's possibly going to be regulated.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to try. We're talking to Jesse Rolfs from Razorback Armory. You know, that's sort of how the bump stock worked. But again, they're focusing their ire on an accessory. You have to get an accessory to the firearm. In many cases, a piece of plastic.
Yeah.
And therefore, they think they can regulate that through the ATF and things like that. So maybe they'll have luck doing that. I don't know.
You know, and recently Joe Biden was up in New York, and when he dropped the ghost gun word again, I was like, oh, come on. Don't you have to be a craftsman to be able to create a ghost gun? That's my understanding.
You need a certain skill set. You have to be, so they sell, these are 80% guns. They sell them like ARs. They sell them for Glocks. They sell some of them, SIG products. SIG doesn't sell them. Other companies sell them to mimic those. But the number that they're throwing around and they're using for ghost guns, okay, the best that we can tell is actually a California number. California's gun laws have been so regulated for so long that they have what's called on-roster and off-roster guns. You can only own certain firearms there.
Right.
But in their loophole is if you build the gun, it would be okay. So, and then they take this other stat, the number they're using is firearms in possession of law enforcement. So the firearms have law enforcement's come into possession of it. Was it used in the commission of a crime? Was it found laying on the street? Was it confiscated? Was it a car stop? You know, however they got into possession of it, if it was a manufactured gun, not by a manufacturer, but by an individual or a group of individuals. So they're using those stats. In Missouri, that stat is not even close. You can come in and buy these guns here, so you don't have to build them. Now, people like to build guns. It's a hobby, you know. So if somebody wants to take pride in craftsmanship and they built a gun, I understand that. But the you know, ghost gun that they're portraying is all criminals use ghost guns. It's all this evil, you know, no serialized. You can't find it.
Well, the word ghost, you know, I mean, that pretty much says it all.
And it's not as easy as you would think. No, you do have to have some skill. You know, you have to drill everything out, mill everything out precise.
When you have an intern, Carl the intern, at the helm of this show, you get everything. Background?
ELO.
Oh, look at you. Look at you.
ELO from the Face the Music album. That's the one with the song that nobody knows the title of, which has got the backwards at the beginning. Fire on High is what it's called. But this song is called Poker, which was the other hit from this album.
Which we will be talking about, a poker bash coming up to support our police in this segment. This segment actually brought to you by Razorback Armory, your gun concierge. We are going to be talking to one of the owners of Razorback Armory in just a moment. But if you have never been to RazorbackArmory.com, start your journey there. Then go meet some new friends at Razorback Armory. It's always a great experience every time I go in. And the great thing is it's centrally located in De Pere, just off Manchester and 270. But get the address and everything else at RazorbackArmory.com. Jesse, welcome to the show, Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. How are you, sir?
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm good. You sound tired.
Well, you know, when you're working around the clock, it's how that
for going into 3 years now, thank you very much, or longer. How are things at the store doing?
Good. Very busy. Keep plugging away. Obviously, with suppressor sales and everything kind of kicking up like we thought they would, and taking care of all the paperwork with it, but now we're handling it, making it happen.
And that's what we're hoping for, a big update on that. The culture of Second Amendment, and it was heard in Jeff City again this week. Where did we end up with that? Do you know, Mark?
What, for the
they were
Second Amendment protection?
Yeah, the SAPA bill.
Preservation Act. To my knowledge, there was no ruling on it. The court is considering arguments against it right now.
Okay.
They have not made a ruling on that yet that I've seen.
Well, I think I talked to a couple of law enforcement officers that actually chiefs that you and I both know, and they said that the confusing part is you ask 10 attorneys what this bill means, you'll get 10 different opinions, and it's like, okay, well, if it's confusing, maybe they do need to clear it up a little bit, or at least in their publication of it, so attorneys do know how to deal with this, and the law enforcement agencies do as well.
Yeah, you know, I've had several police chiefs reach out to me who were not real thrilled, with the way Aaron Doerr, who we had on from the Missouri Firearms Coalition, had described the motivations behind SAPA, and he suggested that, I don't want to put words in his mouth, that in some cases local departments were losing money because formerly working with the feds, when they would confiscate stuff, part of that money came back to the local department. And if they're afraid of having that relationship now because of SAPA, they were losing money and funds to their departments. The chiefs say that's not the case, and that they are just simply concerned with the fines being levied against their department if they're working in conjunction. I think it's much ado about nothing, frankly. Personally, I think it's much ado about nothing. Ultimately, though, the Supreme Court in Missouri is going to make that ruling. They're going to make that decision. And then the legislature is going to have to decide if they're going to tweak it.
Yeah. Jess, do you have an opinion on it or any updates that you've heard?
Well, I'm the same thing you guys were saying. There hasn't been a ruling that we've heard of. I know they were talking about it. I think when they first drew this up, possibly hastily. It was more to say, hey, don't come to Missouri and try to press, you know, unjust or undue unconstitutional gun laws on us. If you do, not even any Missouri law enforcement will be able to help you. Now, the way it was written, it's really kind of subjective. So, yeah, local law enforcement, can I help the federal government prosecute someone in my, you know, in my jurisdiction that's obviously needs to be prosecuted? Well, that's a weird gray area that probably needs to be cleaned up.
Right.
But I think they were going against gun confiscation, you know, illegal seizure of certain weapons. You know, I think the spirit or the goal was there. I don't think it necessarily was written to be clear enough to let law enforcement, you know, attorneys, people know how it was going
to
be implemented.
Well, somebody mentioned to me that as background, right? Just a source mentioned to me, who happened to be a lawyer, that the simplest way to fix it is just to attach a date to it. That this is in effect for any law or ruling passed after the date this law took effect.
Oh,
nothing before that,
okay.
Because the point of it was to prevent the Biden administration and his, you know, people like Beto O'Rourke, who's going to take your AR-15 and your AK-47 away from you,
and your
AR-14. from passing something, maybe by administrative fiat, because that's what he likes to do. He likes to sign executive orders or have his appointee to the ATF, whoever that ends up being, try to do something from a regulatory standpoint that we disagree with or we think infringes on the Second Amendment. So if they just made it more clear that it's forward-facing and not backward-looking, that would satisfy the concerns of a lot of members of law enforcement and people in the legal profession. So we'll see if that happens.
It's very confusing. I do want to ask you, Jesse, I think I text you, actually, about this thing, this contraption similar to a bump stock on a long gun. It was something that's added to a handgun that no law-abiding gun owner is going to buy one of these things that I can't imagine, but it's been found in in big cities, Chicago, St. Louis, that turns a handgun, a semi-automatic handgun, into an automatic. Can you explain what that's called and what people are seeing out there?
Well, it's technically it's not full auto, so it's not like there's a switch that. So fully automatic weapons, generally speaking, you have a safety selector, which would go from safe to semi to full auto, which will allow you no shots, one shot, or just dump the magazine. What this is more or less is like a forced reset trigger. So it's forcing your finger forward, but you are pulling rearward. And with just the appropriate amount of tension, you can go forward, go backward at a high rate of speed so that you would be able to dump the magazine out. You have, on the pistol that you're looking at that we talked about in that picture, you have minimal control over your weapon. I mean, it's going to be all over the place.
Right.
Because you don't have good points of contact to it. You're not stabilizing it. It's very gimmicky type switch. And legally, every time you pull the trigger, only one round goes off, it is not, it's not a machine gun. It's not a fully automatic weapon. But it definitely draws an eyebrow. It draws concern to people. And it's probably something that's possibly going to be regulated.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to try. We're talking to Jesse Rolfs from Razorback Armory. You know, that's sort of how the bump stock worked. But again, they're focusing their ire on an accessory. You have to get an accessory to the firearm. In many cases, a piece of plastic.
Yeah.
And therefore, they think they can regulate that through the ATF and things like that. So maybe they'll have luck doing that. I don't know.
You know, and recently Joe Biden was up in New York, and when he dropped the ghost gun word again, I was like, oh, come on. Don't you have to be a craftsman to be able to create a ghost gun? That's my understanding.
You need a certain skill set. You have to be, so they sell, these are 80% guns. They sell them like ARs. They sell them for Glocks. They sell some of them, SIG products. SIG doesn't sell them. Other companies sell them to mimic those. But the number that they're throwing around and they're using for ghost guns, okay, the best that we can tell is actually a California number. California's gun laws have been so regulated for so long that they have what's called on-roster and off-roster guns. You can only own certain firearms there.
Right.
But in their loophole is if you build the gun, it would be okay. So, and then they take this other stat, the number they're using is firearms in possession of law enforcement. So the firearms have, law enforcement's come into possession of it. Was it used in the commission of a crime? Was it found laying on the street? Was it confiscated? Was it a car stop? You know, however they got into possession of it, if it was a manufactured gun, not by a manufacturer, but by an individual or a group of individuals. So they're using those stats. In Missouri, that stat is not even close. You can come in and buy these guns here so you don't have to build them. Now, people like to build guns. It's a hobby, you know. So if somebody wants to take pride in craftsmanship and they built a gun, I understand that. But the you know, ghost gun that they're portraying is all criminals use ghost guns. It's all this evil, you know, no serialized. You can't find it.
Well, the word ghost, you know, I mean, that pretty much says it all.
And it's not as easy as you would think. No, you do have to have some skill. You know, you have to drill everything out, mill everything out precisely because it's a controlled explosion going on in your hand or somewhat close to your face that has to be done right or the gun doesn't function. So it's not the epidemic that they say it is, especially not here in Missouri.
Right, right. Well, okay, so that's that. The scary word ghost, we're done talking about that. I do want to talk about the last time we had you on Second Amendment. Oh, you had a question.
No,
sorry.
No.
I wasn't looking at
go
you.
Go ahead, go ahead.
Last time we had you on, you said you were anticipating a faster pace to get suppressors or silencers, if you will. Where are we at with that story?
So what we were talking about before is they were, when we talked last, we were right on the, day of, them talking about e-file. So the way that we've always done suppressor paperwork is you would come in, we talk about the suppressor, get everything done. We did everything digitally here always, but right at the time when we're supposed to submit, we would actually print everything out, send it to the federal government, and it was a actual paper file that went through the processes with the federal government.
Okay.
Now with ATF e-file, we do everything digitally. We format the file digitally, and then we present it to the federal government all digital. So there's no more paper involved.
That's fantastic. That's got to expedite it right away.
So it does. Now, we haven't – so it's very new. Obviously, we started this right around the first of the year. They're saying 90 days. They're saying that they will be able to spin your file and then get it back to us in 90 days. I think that was – I think that was not very hopeful thinking. The amount of suppressor files that they are getting, the amount of times that their server goes down, their website goes down, just because of not only us, but everyone in the United States filing this paperwork into them, their system just can't handle it. For example, I think we're selling at least 5 to 6 times more suppression per, you can look at it day, week, month, however, it's just climbing. Because everyone wants that. You know, before we were looking at a 10 to 12 month window to deliver your suppressor on a paper file.
That's huge.
Now you're cutting that to 3 months, and everyone that's coming in is like, oh, I want to do that e-file so I can get my suppressor in 90 days. I'm like, I'll do your e-file. I will file it in. The government's in charge of that 90-day number.
Yeah, but have you had any come back yet, Jesse? Because I talked to a friend from a firearms store, and they had one come back in 3 weeks.
Whoa.
So is it on a Form 1, I can believe that. I haven't seen anything yet on a Form 4 for a suppressor.
Okay.
I will tell you the people that were paper filed, okay, previous to us implementing the e-file or letting us do that, I'm getting what's called batch filing, which is awesome, which is what they were supposed to do anyway. So I've got customers who buy a suppressor and wait 2 months, buy another one, wait 2 months, buy another one. So and over a period of a year, they've got 5 or 6 of them here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when they clear the oldest one, they look and see if there's any more in queue, and they're clearing all of them. So you may get a 10-month, an 8-month, a 6-month, and a 4-month. All at the same time because they cleared everything out of their queue. They're trying to get rid of all the paper right now.
That's like laddering CDs for investments, you know?
Exactly.
That's a good idea, though.
The beauty is, it's great because the beauty is when I call the customer and I'm like, hey, I've got approval for some suppressors. He goes, oh, man, I wish I got all of them. I'm like, well, you did get all of them. So you're picking up 7 today. You know, you're picking up 5.
Bring the big credit card.
Yeah, no kidding.
Actually, I think it's paid ahead of time, isn't it?
It's all paid ahead of time, yeah.
You're dang right.
It's, It's definitely Christmas, no matter what day we call them. But e-file is working. There's a lot of talk in the industry on the customer side and some other stuff through social media posts. And we've had to make a couple of them to try to explain it. But it is working. It is doing what it's supposed to do. It is very time and labor intensive on your dealer. Everything has to mirror. Everything has to be perfect. When we send in paper files, if there was a problem, they'd mail them back to us. You could make a correction. There are no corrections on e-files. It's A or B. It's either pass or fail. And if it fails, they send it back to you and you start over again. But they don't even allow it to get presenced in. They don't even allow it to get filed if there's any mistakes. And part of it is just your dealer being very, watching everything, checking the files, making sure everything's perfect so that when it goes there, everything works perfect.
All right, Jesse, before we move on to talking about your generous heart, for those people that have never investigated what a suppressor is or what they should get, what calibers do suppressors come in?
Pretty much we suppress everything from a 22, small 22 rifle all the way through a 50 BMG, your largest, big gun, and honestly everything in between. Your most popular stuff, we do a lot of 22 rim fire, your center fire pistol, either your 9 or 45, and then center fire rifle, 223 all the way up through large hunting calibers. I've got a lot of guys who hunt with 300 Win Mag, which suppress it is, that gun's got a lot of kick, a lot of muzzle blast, a lot of concussion, but you put a suppressor on it and it tames that gun down. It makes it very pleasurable to shoot.
Okay. All right. Well, go to RazorbackArmory.com to find out more information about that. Don't you love when you can accomplish something, Mark, in one text? I sent one text to Razorback Armory, to Jesse directly, said, hey, Poker Bash is coming up March 27th. Big Texas Hold'em game. You supported us last year. Would you like to do it again? And right away, he talked to Brad, and they are donating another shotgun. Great home defense piece. And if you want to describe what gun you have donated to our event, please, floor's yours.
Yeah, no problem. If anybody was at the bash last year, we did the same gun. We just kind of looked at our records and was like, hey, that one worked. So it's a pump, 20-gauge pump tactical shotgun, home defense, just a fun gun. I'm sorry, 12-gauge. I said 20. 20-inch barrel. But it's nice set up for home defense if you wanted, to go out and put some targets up and blast them, But we appreciate what you guys do. I mean, definitely anything we can do to support local charities and law enforcement like that, we definitely try to get involved.
So that's in addition to the Sig Sauer 365 compact 9mm and a Springfield Armory Browning High Power that they're raffling off.
We're adding to the list, man.
Yes, nice.
it was a gun auction and raffle that we had a side poker game going.
Yeah.
It was one of those deals.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Where can people buy tickets?
All you have to do is go to Facebook and type in 6TH and then Big Dogs Poker Bash, and it'll all come up. It's Realty Executive
Premier. D-A-W-G.
I'm so sorry. Doesn't everybody spell D-A-W-G dog that way? Okay.
Some people don't know, but
not Snoop Dogg. That's D-O-double-G.
Yes.
So this is D-A-W-G.
Yeah.
And we're trying to get Mark to commit. It's the day before your anniversary, or it's your anniversary?
It is the 27th is my wedding anniversary, but it's on a Sunday.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to work out with my significant other whether or not I can get away with if we celebrate Saturday night, can I go play poker all day Sunday? That'd be fantastic.
did I ask this last week? Does she play poker?
Oh, no.
Oh, crap.
No, but she's got a really good poker face.
Does she like to shop? Yeah.
She does.
Oh, this is like, it's also not only a gun raffle and an auction, it's also a silent auction on steroids. So shopping,
okay,
she could be there to root you on. I'm trying to sell two tickets.
I know you
here.
Are. Yeah, I hear anyway, that. I hear that.
if you want to see that, you can go to that page to find out what more Razorback has done with this beautiful shotgun. So Jesse, thank you for your knowledge, your kindness. And I don't know if you listen to the show, but in the previous segment of the show, we had Randy Knowles. I don't know if you know that name. He is doing the 7th Annual Cycle Showcase St. Louis at the Foundry. And I say that because Jesse was a custom bike builder back in the day. Do you know the guy?
I don't, but that sounds like a good thing to go check out.
Okay, well, listen to the show once in a while, will you please?
I will.
All right. Jesse, take care, man. Say hey to the gang, all right?
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah, good information, Jesse. We appreciate that. And in case we didn't mention it, earlier. This is down at the City Foundry. Is that bike show that Bo just mentioned again. And the address is 3730 Foundry Way in St. Louis, not far from IKEA.
It's across the street. It's like by Vandeventer and...
I have heard, because we just had somebody from the Foundry on St. Louis Talks and women's retail thing. She said a lot of people have to end up with events like this, have to park at IKEA.
Oh, wow.
Otherwise, it's off street. But I wonder if IKEA has put up signs that say, this parking is only for... IKEA.
Their parking lot's pretty big.
Or you may have to come back and reassemble your car.
Yeah.
If you park over there, it's at your own risk.
Yeah. You know, you've heard of a food truck? They need a tire truck selling tires out there if they're missing.
Hey, enjoy. I hope you enjoy your weekend. I'll just say it again. If you're paying attention to the big football game, go Bengals. I want to say, I know they're the underdog, but I'm rooting for my Bengals.
Three points is not really an underdog.
Yeah, I know. But every playoff game was decided by 3 points.
Even if you don't care, like. How about anti-Rams?
Yeah,
anti-Rams. That has a ring to it, doesn't it?
Does.
A little bit.
Have a great weekend. We'll see you next time on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.